And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report, coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful, snowy, blustery northwest Pennsylvania, where we broadcast live every weeknight at 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network, of course. Great people, Global Star Radio Network. That's the place to tune into us, as well as YouTube Live. Yes, YouTube Live. We'll have video coming back up. Yeah, I don't know, in a few days. Just video coming back up, full video, full in living color. We'll say Monday at the outside. And of course, BTR, Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, folks, you got two separate websites, Hagman and Hagman.com there for show information. And HagmanReport.com. HagmanReport.com, that's where to go for the burgeoning writers, the new writers, the truth, the reports, the information, news analysis, show prep, all that stuff. Got some great articles there as well on HagmanReport.com. Bookmark that website. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel, please. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And also follow us on our social networking feed while you still can. You know, the crackdown, we're going to be talking about this. The crackdown is here. It's already here. Andrew Kerr is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Going to be talking about a very important topic about what's taking place with this censorship. Getting down, I mean, just the nuts and bolts of it, basically. So I really can't wait for that. You know, we've got a landmark federal court ruling that's opening the way for the explosion of constructing mega mosques across America. Waleed Shubat is the author of an article. You go to shubat.com. And, well, actually, it's Andrew Bizod who's the actual author of this article. But what we're seeing here is the Islamization of America. And it's not by military action. It's not by anything else. It's going to come through the courts, and it's going to come through our religious laws as well. The biggest danger America faces, again, is not from guns and terrorists necessarily, but lawyers and activist judges. We've seen that. And of course, again, this article appears at Waleed Shubat's website, shubat.com. But there's a court in New Jersey that made what's being called a landmark ruling against a small town, in which said that Muslims were discriminated against by being required to have more parking spaces for their mosque than for other places of worship. See, because of the 5 times a day prayer requirement for Muslims. Well, this federal judge ruled this past weekend that a New Jersey town broke the law by requiring more parking spaces than for other places of worship. It's ridiculous, but you understand how this is taking place. This case came to a head after 4 years of hearings. The Islamic Society sued the township, this particular township in New Jersey, Bernard's Township, New Jersey. They denied plans to build a mosque due to concerns that there were not enough parking spaces, arguing that mosques needed more parking, again, than churches or synagogues. Well, in court, the township insisted that the issue was not a religious one, but a concern over parking. And the township's attorney said, yeah, it's just simply based on the needs of the applicant. That's how we're looking at this. Well, there it is. Okay. This was tossed out. And what this will do, and I truly believe that what's taking place here is the doors are swung open for this Islamic takeover of this country. Now, you might think it's a small deal compared to everything else, but it's not. Because this rends at our very fabric, our Judeo-Christian fabric, because Islam is not compatible with democracy or a representative republic. However you want to, the accurate thing is, Islam is not compatible with a representative republic or the United States. If you want to say democracy, that's true too, but we're not a democracy. That's in the news right now. And of course, I'd be remiss not to bring this up as well. Dan Rather, did you see this? Dan Rather's teaching a truth in the news course. Okay. Now you know that the fake news cycle is in full swing when you've got Dan Rather, former CBS anchor, now teaching an online course focused on ethics in journalism. Are you kidding me? Really? You gotta be kidding me. Called Journalism and Finding the Truth in the News. The class is aimed at media career aspirants in the general public. Go figure. Dan Rather. You remember Rathergate. I mean, I don't know. At first I thought this was satire. But it's not, sadly. It's not. Now, if you thought 2016 was a banner year for WikiLeaks, 2017 is an even bigger year. Zero Hedge is talking about this. And I don't know if anyone caught the recent Julian Assange interview with Hannity. Well, it was previewed. Well, anyone watch that? I'm asking that as if I'm expecting an answer, right? No. Eric said, yeah, a little bit. Helping me out there. Well, all right. The fact is, it was denied by Assange that any material was received from Russia. Not the Russian government, nor a state party. And I do believe, I do suspect, and I think we all kind of suspect, don't you folks? Those paying attention to the news and the deaths, DNC, who might have leaked many of these documents. Now, with WikiLeaks, you're talking 10 years, well over 10 million documents. But Assange said that if you thought 2016 was a big year, 2017 is going to blow you away. There was a tweet as well from Assange, giving no hints as to what might be in store, but the tweet featuring a clip from Clint Eastwood also included a link to the website's donation page, so people can help the site prepare for the showdown. But the interesting part about this, you know, Zero Hedge addresses this, and 2016, of course, was another game changer for the whistleblowing site WikiLeaks, as it delivered a massive amount of documentation over a 12-month period. And don't forget, there were over 50,000 emails from Podesta that began on October 3rd, I believe it was. And of course, Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign chair. There were 27,000 emails from the Democratic National Committee, which confirmed the DNC worked against Sanders. That was a big thing back then. I mean, obviously a big thing in favor of Clinton. Not that I'm against that, but you know, and people say, well, you can't release stolen. The number of Christians, by the way, who say, oh my goodness, who take more issue over these documents being, obtained through less than conventional means versus the information they contain. I have a problem with that. Just from my Christian point of view, that's just me. You can disagree with me, and if you do, that's fine. But to me, the information is much more valuable. If there's information of wrongdoing, and there is, if there's information of collusion between the journalism, the media and the government, and there is, or the media and members of the globalist society, there is, the presidential candidates such as Hillary Clinton, there's ample evidence there, then I think that outweighs any questions as to how it came to the public's knowledge. That's just me. And you know, there was that part where there's a lot of misinformation about Assange giving away or the WikiLeaks putting our military in jeopardy. I think if you look at the totality of the documents and individual documents. I don't think you'll find any of that. They also released more U.S. State Department cables as well as documents that gave insight into U.S. arming of Yemen. And text from the TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, and the Trade in Services Agreement were also revealed. To me, that those were very damaging and damning emails. And, of course, the basis for this New World Order globalist agenda. And, of course, the United Nations, just the United Nations information as well. And I do suspect that, there will be more released on, Hillary Clinton. Now, you have to wonder, there are a lot of people who said, wait a minute. And I've seen these various, I've seen this. Well, wait a minute. Well, what about the information that was supposed to put Hillary in jail? What about the bombshells in 2016 that never materialized? Color me skeptical. Oh, bigger hype than last year. Oh, that's impossible. Yeah, I'm still waiting for that WikiLeaks release that was supposed to be put. Look, timing is everything, especially with information. And I don't know what they have. I'm not privy to that. I'm talking about WikiLeaks, but I do know that when you are, if the strategy is to expose or oust either one, the globalists, then you do it. The timing is critical. The timing is critical when you've got information. And some people say, well, just release it all at once. And that's fine in theory, in my view. However, you've got some issues when you do that. A lot of things get mired and covered when that happens, and not covered properly. So you just have to understand that. I believe that we all have to understand that there are issues here that perhaps we don't know about. But I do expect more information coming out that is going to expose the Clinton Global Initiative, the Clinton Foundation. I suspect that'll occur. And speaking of hacking, Guccifer cast doubt on Obama administration's Russia hacking claims as well. Of course, you know him as Guccifer, but his real name is Marcel Lazar. He's talking from prison some 3,700 miles away. He had told Fox News, for example, in an exclusive interview that he doubts the Obama administration's allegations about Moscow directing cyber attacks against the DNC groups back in the 2016 election. He doubts the authenticity of them. In fact, he spoke to Fox News senior executive Pamela Brown. There was a series of recorded phone calls from his Romanian jail cell in late December, and he described the allegations of Russian cyber attacks during the 2016 election as part of a fake cyber war. Yeah, that's kind of the way we see it here as well. A disconcerting thought here. I had seen something about some movement of troops, Russia or American troops, toward the Russian border earlier. You know, look, I don't know what's going on with this, with some of these fleeting headlines. You have to wonder. There was some information about U.S. and NATO troops moving about closer to Russia in somewhat of a threatening maneuver. I'm not 100% certain where this is all headed. You've got this attempted stoking up of World War III, really, or four, or whatever, just a world war. And I think we have to be very wary of what's going on. And with U.S. and NATO troops against Russia. And the narrative there, and Hodges talks about, Dave Hodges talks a lot about this, and Dave and I talk about this a lot, the predictive programming or the preparatory programming that, goes on. And I think that when you have this single narrative about, hey, Russia did the hacking. Russia hacked into, you know, the Vermont or the New England electrical grid, which was disproven. The hacking itself as well, the larger hacking, that was disproven of the DNC or the interference in elections. You know, it's pretty clear to me that the demonization of Russia and Putin is what is wanted, you know, what they want to get across, of course. Now, Putin, I don't trust him, and I certainly don't think he's a good guy in terms of, you know, any American president will say Trump. I think that Putin has his own agenda. On the other hand, you've got to take a look on balance as to what's, you know, what is taking place in our foreign meddling. But yes, what I mentioned earlier, Lithuania confirms presence of U.S. Special Forces as a deterrence against Russian aggression. This coming out of RT. And of course, citing RT is really, you know, we can't do that, right? But American Special Forces, at least one of the contingents, is stationed in Lithuania to bolster the training of the Baltic State Zone Commandos and to serve as a deterrence against potential Russian aggression. Well, this is kind of a newer or more of a more recent move in a use of special forces. You need to watch this. We need to watch what's taking place out there. U.S. troops amass on Russian border. Alex Jones is reporting that, of course. He reported that this past weekend. But even when you're looking at special forces and when you're looking at troops, U.S. troops, you also have to think too that we have had intelligence assets or the CIA type of assets in and around that area for a lot longer. Now there are some videos at ABC News, for example, that show this. But NATO pressures Russia by moving troops close to border. That, of course, again, on Alex Jones' InfoWars. And, you know, again, we have to look at this in the context of a larger agenda of globalism. Anyway, all right. So that's what that's all about there. I'm concerned as we look at the world situation. Although there's moving, well, you know, let me bounce into this too, because gee whiz, Drudge is reporting now moving vans in front of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, 1700 in front of the White House. I'm sorry. Moving truck spotted outside the White House. Go figure. Maybe they can't come fast enough. Anyway, I wonder if they're counting the silver as they load up the trucks, as they're watching the. You remember what Clinton's did? Of course, they took the valuables and things out of the White House. But where's Obama going? Just to be clear, Obama is expected to move his family just down the road a bit. In fact, he's going to be living near Ivanka Trump and her husband, Jared. It's interesting. He's going to be around for a while. This is Obama's third term. Really. I think, when I say third term, this is Obama's way to stay in power. I don't mean third term, and I apologize for that. I was thinking, had Hillary gotten in this would certainly be Obama's third term, but this is Obama's way to keep in power, the globalist agenda at hand. We just have to watch this as well. You know, too, we had talked, a big issue during this most recent presidential campaign, as we still talk about this, and I saw this, and I had to really verify, drill down on this to make sure this was correct. Immigration and Customs Enforcement deported less than 1% of all illegal aliens back in the fiscal year 2016. If anyone out there does believe that Obama really deported many No, don't believe that. In fact, he was often referred to, and I think this was an attempted way to paint him, of course, as a deporter in chief. Well, it's often referenced, but it's also equally erroneous. Americans who think that the law is actually being adhered to, you're wrong with respect to the immigration laws. You're wrong. The fiscal year, ICE, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, recently released this fiscal year 2016 report, and stated that as a whole, the DHS, which houses both the U.S. Customs and Border Protection and ICE, removed or returned a total of 450,954 illegals last year alone, each counted as a deportation by the term's weakest definition. But when you start looking at this, wait a minute, no. See, a closer look at the information contained here, the vast majority of these deportations, the ones that are claimed by Obama, hey, we deported 450, almost a half a million illegal aliens were deported alone. No, when you look at this, they weren't actual deportations at all. These were primarily single adults who got caught crossing the border from Mexico and were either turned around or, in the case of non-Mexicans, processed and sent back to their home country. It wasn't a deportation. It was just merely, we ain't letting you in. So, in fact, of the roughly 451,000 aliens, illegals, who were removed from the country last year, about 65,332 of them, about 14%, were apprehended inside of the United States. Now, this is according to the DHS's own report. Think about that. And the vast majority of these, by their own admission, were criminals who'd been convicted of a violent felony or were a threat to national security. Who in the world's working at ICE? Or why aren't the laws? There are no laws this is crazy. So the next time some sniveling, snot-nosed, liberal, progressive idiot says, oh, well, you know, my goodness, but these poor aliens, these poor refugees. Wait a minute. Here's the deal. Here's the deal right here. According to, in fiscal year 2016, as a whole, DHS, and that includes U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, removed or returned 450,954 illegal aliens last year, okay? And each one of those, now listen to that number, 450,954, and each counted as a deportation by the term's weakest definition. A closer look shows that the vast majority of these deportations, the ones that Obama said, yeah, we did it, we're tough on illegal immigration. A closer look, no, these weren't deportations. These were, hey, you can't come in. And then we'll just mark, you know, okay, you try to come in, we turned you away. That's a deportation in their lexicon of meaning, right? And then, of the roughly 451,000 illegals who were tossed from the country last year, about 65,000 or 14% were apprehended in the interior of the United States. And though the vast majority of them were convicts and convicted of a violent felony or were determined to be a threat to national security, only 5% of all removals, and we're talking about 23,000, were cases that include people who unlawfully crossed into the U.S. since 2014. An even smaller 1%, which, I mean, we're talking less than 5,000, were people who had illegals who had been given a final order of removal in the last 2 or 3 years. So overall, we didn't do squat. That's the bottom line here. But see, here's the problem. The numbers are misleading. The way the numbers are being thrust upon the public are misleading. They're highly misleading, and they mask the fact that the people arrested inside the country. They're dropping. When you take ICE data analyzed by the Center for Immigration Studies last summer, there are about a million illegals inside who received a final order of removal from an immigration judge still living in the United States. Okay, so about a million are walking around in the interior of the United States that should be out of here. And that includes about 179,000 convicted criminals. How you feeling about this now? And despite these abhorrent numbers, the administration's recent report said that the states that ICE made nearly 11,000 fewer arrests inside, in the interior of the U.S., than in 2016 than in 2015. Okay, so even assuming that every illegal arrested by ICE in 2016 was under a final order of removal, that'd mean that they only arrested about 12% of the total number of legally removable immigrants, aliens, criminals, and only deported about 7%. That's the bottom line. That's the number you need to take home. That's the information you need to know. And that combined with the mosques, the other than Mexicans, and you think that this is all just, you know, why aren't people talking about this? Folks, we're listening to the Hagmann Report right here, Doug Hagmann. Up next, Andrew Kerr had a talk with us. We're going to be talking about censorship and really what's really going on. Stay right where you're at, folks. Going to be right back on this blustery day. Video backup, I'm sure, by Monday, no later. So this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Wow, got fired up there right before the break. Now I'm going to get fired up again because we have with us Andrew Kerr. This young man, folks, if I could, we should buy stock in him. I mean, seriously, his stock is rising because his investigative work product is absolutely incredible. Go to thecitizensaudit.com. You know, we promise as a platform to bring you the best, and Andrew Kerr is among the best. Andrew Kerr is an investigative researcher, head of thecitizensaudit.com, and we're proud to have him as an independent contributor to HagmannReport.com, and we're glad he's here. He's going to talk tonight about the, really, if you go back to, just go to thecitizensaudit.com, and this was, he allowed us to republish with a link back to his Citizens Audit, his article from December 28th, The Nuts and Bolts of Countering the Disinformation Propaganda Act. Folks, what you're hearing out there in some arenas, it's blustery hype. I mean, it's blustery. No, it's not hype. It's just blustery. And it's difficult sometimes to really dissect the nuts and bolts of really what this means, because there's oftentimes overstatements, and in many, many cases, understatements, or overstating the facts, or understating the facts. You've got to get the facts right. And this is what Andrew Kerr does. TheCitizensAudit.com. Andrew, welcome back to the program, sir.
Thanks for having me back on, and thanks for the comments. I appreciate that.
Well, it's true. And I'm not blowing smoke, and, you know, I mean it when I say that the information that you've provided should serve as the basis for what people need to know about, for example, about the censorship that's coming. It's you approach this in a very reasoned, well thought out manner, in a very well researched manner. Now, having said that, what's going on here? Because on the 23rd, Obama signed the 2017 NDAA. We've referenced it. We've talked about this. We've talked about what's on page 547, which is the establishment of the Global Engagement Center. But you know what? We want your take on it, your findings, because you spent a lot more time on this and dug very deep into this. So why don't we get into this?
Yeah, so two key points. The text of the law authorizes the United States government to collect, store, and disseminate the records of anyone that's considered to be spreading propaganda and disinformation. That includes United States citizens. And there's also no limitation in the law to prevent the government from directing anti-propaganda efforts to its own citizens. There's some subtle differences in the original version of the law that was introduced back in July and what was actually signed into law last week or a couple weeks ago.
Let me stop you there, only because I want to take this one step at a time, if you don't mind, because I did notice we had the Senate version, or the House version, the Senate version, and then the final version, which Obama signed. And you're correct in the differences of language and subtle but troubling differences. I just want to let people know. So let's get the right version, folks, before you start looking and trying to analyze this. But thank you. Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to make sure that's clear. So go ahead, sir.
No problem. So in the version that was introduced back in July, there was a section, the provision in the law that said that no funds for the activities of this Global Engagement Center, which is the entity that was just created to combat propaganda, no funds for the activities of the Global Engagement Center may be used with the intent to influence public opinion in the United States. That language was removed from the final version, which was just signed into law. Now it says that none of the funds can be used for purposes other than countering foreign propaganda and misinformation that threatens the United States' national security. So the language is saying that nothing can be used to direct propaganda to the United States citizens. That was totally removed. And so when we look at comments from Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, he said a couple days ago that this bill is primarily dedicated to countering propaganda and disinformation outside of the United States. Well, if that's the case, then why did they remove the provision that specified that none of the provisions in this bill can be used to influence public opinion in the United States? It's contradictory. And what he's saying, in my opinion, is it's a flat-out lie. If that was the case, then they wouldn't have removed that provision.
Okay. All right. And so, what's your answer to that? Looking at this, what's the answer? Obviously, to me, the answer is simple. The purpose for them to remove that provision or that restriction is so propaganda can be legally thrust upon the American people. Is that right?
Yeah, so that's exactly what's happening here. And it's really subtle. So the Global Engagement Center, they have 10 different functions that they can that they're authorized to carry out in the law. And the provision number 3 is saying that the Global Engagement Center itself can support the development and dissemination of fact-based narratives and analysts to counter propaganda and disinformation directed at the United States and United States allies and partner nations. And another provision says that the Global Engagement Center can at times direct anti-propaganda efforts to audiences outside the United States. But what they can also do is administer an information access fund. And so what that is $160 million that they're budgeted for the next 2 years that allows them to give out grants to media companies, non-governmental organizations, research centers to spread propaganda to their audiences. And there's no provision that says that they can't give funds to American companies.
And so, you know, we talked about this, Andrew, in a previous show. It would be, you know, we'll just use Hagman and Hagman, for example, all right, as an example. And folks, we would never, ever, 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 ever do this. Trust me. There's no amount of money in the world that we would do this for. But that $160 million, we'll say, oh, I don't know. We can always use new equipment, new personnel, you know, whatever. And we're always running at a deficit, or so it seems. So if the government said, hey, look, you know, here's $5 million. here's a grant. Why don't you apply for a grant, and we'll give you a grant for $5 million. There's going to be strings attached, and that's kind of how is that how this money's allocated, perhaps?
Well, what the law says is that grants can be used to support efforts by this Global Engagement Center to counter efforts by foreign entities to spread propaganda within the United States. So whatever the center determines to be foreign propaganda or misinformation, the center can give out grants to organizations to counter that messaging.
And but can they do it to co-opt the organization? For example, if I can be bought for $5 million, because I need new equipment and I want a bigger, better lifestyle, could it work that way too? I guess is my question.
Well,
we'll give you the $5 million, but you got to kind of here's the subject line and here's what you can't talk about and here's what you can talk about. I guess that's what I was saying.
Well, you know, the law's been signed, and now it's up to the interpretation of this administrator to carry out the functions of the center. And I think that that's a valid interpretation of the law. An administrator could be assigned to run this Global Engagement Center that has good intentions. That's not going to abuse the powers that he or she has in order to spread propaganda to American citizens. But we can also get a bad administrator that does just that, that can give out grants to beef up media content providers in an effort to drown out anything that goes against the narrative of what the United States. And
gotcha.
That's a really really concerning thing. In the text of the law, they use the phrase fact-based narratives. It's really concerning to me that they use the word narrative, because facts don't need a narrative. Facts are facts. But this Global Engagement Center is going to develop and disseminate fact-based narratives. States government pertinent to national security interests. So
man,
that's a lot that's up to interpretation, and it could go south really quickly. I think that we're one step away from having a ministry of truth in the United States.
Exactly, and I totally agree with you on that. And I know John had written up the program description and or referenced 1984 several times, and it gets frustrating because it seems like this is always at our doorstep, or it's always been at our doorstep here, at least since 01, or in earnest anyway. And this is crazy. So, okay. You write about the functions of the Global Engagement Center, and we touched on that, and you state that the original version of the bill focused solely on countering foreign government information warfare efforts, and the final version, of course, was modified to include non-state actors. And of course, that's a big part of the thing. And what's a non-state actor? You get into that, NGOs, multinational corporations,
so,
religious
yeah,
groups,
so-
yeah. Go ahead.
Now let's talk about non-state actors. So the phrase non-state actor wasn't in the original version of the bill, and it was added into the final version that was just signed into law. And so when I was researching to find out what the United States considers to be a non-state actor, there's no solid definition. The Oxford English Dictionary defines a non-state actor as an individual or an organization that has significant political influence. So, yeah, like you said, some examples are, multinational corporations, international media, anonymous. Also, there's violent non-state actors like ISIS, drug cartels, terrorist organizations. And, it can be an individual too. So if you have a large Twitter or Facebook following, you have a significant amount of power to distribute information to your followers. And I point out that in 2006, Time magazine quite literally awarded the Person of the Year award to you with the headline that says, "You control the information age. Welcome to your world." So I think that absolutely an administrator can interpret this bill to say that, if there's somebody with 100,000 Twitter followers that's, pushing out a news narrative that goes against what they consider to be the United States national security interests, absolutely that person is a non-state actor. And this bill allows this Global Engagement Center to maintain, collect, use and disseminate records for research and data analysts of non-state propaganda and disinformation. That's quoted from actual bill. And records is really any item, collection, or grouping of information about an individual. So that's a lot of ammunition for somebody to collect the information of Americans that they consider to be spreading disinformation.
Yes.
It's really quite concerning. It's hard to overstate just how concerning that is and just how much power that's giving this new organization, the Global Engagement Center.
Who's going to, do we know who's going to head this up, this Global Engagement Center, either by position, government position, or by name? Do we know?
Not yet. The head of the center is going to be an individual who is an official of the federal government who's going to be appointed by the president. That's it. So the president gets to pick and choose who gets to head this organization. I don't believe that Congress needs to give a thumbs up or thumbs down on the appointment. I think that is just
so
up to
Carlos Slim can be appointed, or who knows? It could be anybody. It could be, okay, I get you. All right. And by, I should make mention of this. We've got some terrible audio here, Andrew. I just want to make mention of that. I don't know what's happened, but no surprise. Finest equipment and terrible audio on your end coming through, so you're a little choppy. Just want to kind of give you a heads up on that.
Okay.
All right. So, okay. The other part of this, too, and I don't want to lead your... I don't want to necessarily lead the conversation, but the other part of this I really want to touch on and then let you go wherever, is that the U.S. government, can collect your records for research and data analysis. And that is so concerning to me and should be to everyone, and even those people who say, well, I've got nothing to hide, so they can research away. Ah, that just drives me nuts. But go ahead, what's your view on this?
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can. Yeah, now, wow.
Okay,
now
okay.
You're coming in. There you go.
I missed your last question. Can you say that again?
Sure. And thanks. Whatever you did worked. So, anyway, I'm curious on this. I don't want to direct the conversation too much here, but I just want to make sure I got this question in. You had mentioned about the government collecting everyone's records for research and data analysis. And to maintain, control, collect, disseminate records by people, which is one of the functions of the Global Engagement Center. And to those people who say, well, I've got nothing to hide, they can research my stuff all day long, I got nothing to hide. It's not right, it's an invasion of privacy, but what's your analysis of this? Because you do isolate this in your report, and I think it's important to bring out.
Well, the language that is all throughout this bill is that this is combating information that is aimed at undermining the national security interests of the United States. So I don't think that anybody would want to be on a list that says that, hey, Andrew Kerr might be spreading information that's dangerous to the national security interests of the United States. That's not a good list to be on for anybody.
Yeah, I agree. And that's an arbitrary decision. I mean, you could be researching, avocado dip, and it doesn't matter, what you're researching. It seems like your placement on this list is pretty arbitrary.
Yeah, I mean, to really sum this all up, is that fake news has been branded as dangerous all throughout the news media, especially in response to Pizzagate. They're calling the efforts of independent journalists to be dangerous, spreading dangerous fake news. And the way that I see it is that there's limitations to our freedom of speech. You can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater. You can't make threats against somebody's life. There are limitations to free speech. And if the government can brand a news narrative as dangerous to the security interests of the United States, then they could use that as an excuse to forcibly remove a news narrative if that narrative is, quote, dangerous to the United States. And also, if it gets to that point, they're going to have a list of individuals and groups and entities that are, known distributors of foreign disinformation and propaganda. it's all very, very concerning. You know, right now, they have the authority to build up that list and to do data analysis on information that goes against the United States narratives. We're just one step away from them. You know, when they the language of the law says that the engagement center is going to counter misinformation efforts. But what does counter mean? Again, that's it seems to be up to the interpretation of the administrator. If countering just means, you know, flooding the airwaves with the United States narrative, that's one thing. But does that also mean that they can forcefully, you know, shut down websites? We don't know. I think it just determines it depends on the interpretation of the administrator. And in my view, that's a lot of power to be giving somebody and a lot of authority. I, for one, think that we should be putting a lot of pressure on these senators and lawmakers. Why did you remove the provision that says that nothing in the center can be used to be directed at United States citizens? Why remove that in the first place? We should put that back in the law.
Yeah, that'd make me feel better. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. But something else that I'd like to point out is, you know, going back to a non-state actor, ISIS is a non-state actor, and I can see that some of this bill is built with good intentions. So I think that all of us would agree that, you know, if somebody's spreading ISIS propaganda within the United States, I don't think that really anybody would have a problem with, you know, with putting them on a list and tracking them. But right. There's no distinction in the law that says that, hey, we're going to single out terrorists or ISIS as an entity. It just says non-state actors. It's a blanket statement. So this may have been built with the best of intentions, but there needs to be some limitations built into the law to say that, you know, what do you mean by information that goes against the security interests? Or what do you mean by non-state actor? Why did you remove the provision saying that American citizens can't be targeted with this bill? Is this a lot of questions up in the air? And I think that they need to be building some barriers because at the moment it seems like we're giving way too much authority to the government, and I don't like the I don't like using the term slippery slope lightly, but I do see this situation as a slippery slope. If this goes through without anybody, you know, fighting back or raising any alarms, then they're just going to keep on going down this road of, you know, labeling news as dangerous and then forcefully removing it. I think that's the pathway that we're going down.
I totally agree with you on that. Now, we've only got about, I don't know, 6-7 minutes here left. What else? I've got some other questions, but I'll defer to you. What else is on your radar now with respect to what's taking place with the internet, the censorship, this bill, how it's being implemented? Anything else that, you know, you haven't mentioned that you kind of want to make sure that we cover?
I think that we've covered the gist of it.
Okay.
I just say, you know, a call to action is we shouldn't be okay with the government labeling a news narrative as dangerous. And that's what this bill is doing. You know, by all means, I have no problem with the government, you know, clarifying facts if, you know, there's legitimate disinformation. But the language in this bill is it says fact-based narratives, and
That's a problem. The phrase. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Go ahead.
Facts are facts at the end of the day, and that's what the government should be distributing, not a narrative. Because, you know, if you think about it, the narrative that Barack Obama wants to be putting out is a lot different than the narrative that Donald Trump wants to put out. And it doesn't mean that, you know, one is right or one is not, but, you know, people they cherry pick facts that they like, and they leave out the facts that they don't like, and that's, you know, what a narrative is.
Exactly. And thank you for that clarification, because that word is overused, I believe, and not fully understood. Narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one I really like, but okay, we'll go with it. Well, let me toss out a question, because I've seen over the last few days, and you can extend it back into perhaps the last few weeks, really since, I'll just say since the revelation of Pizzagate, you know, only in the context of timing. I've seen some really weird things happen with websites, with Twitter feeds, with social networking and all of this, and of course the upswing of the use of the phrase fake news. What's your sense as to what is taking place right now? Is there a covert pushback against the independent media right now that we're kind of seeing maybe bits and pieces of, but not the full picture?
Well, I think that organizations like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, YouTube is Google, so I think we see it a lot where an organization does something, like when the president of Chick-fil-A came out in favor of, you know, of or against gay marriage. There was such a blowback against Chick-fil-A, and people were wanting to boycott Chick-fil-A. And so I think that, you know, we saw it after the election, is that the liberal media pointed their fingers at Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, and they said, why did you allow fake news to spread on Facebook? Why didn't you do something about it? And so there's a lot of organizations, there's a lot of noise that's placed on these technology companies that host a lot of this content, asking them to take action against the dangers of fake news. And so I think that these organizations are being pressured into censoring. You know, Facebook just agreed to fact-check articles. You know, Facebook is going to essentially have editors on hand to verify the content of what people are posting on their platform. That has nothing to do with the mission statement of Facebook as a social media company, but they've been pressured by organizations like Media Matters and the mainstream media to do this. And the pressure that some of these, you know, left-leaning organizations can place on these companies is overwhelming, and we just see them break. And so all of a sudden we have YouTube is shutting down channels, Facebook is fact-checking information, and all sorts of things that, you know, escapes the bounds of their original missions. So I think that's why we're seeing this, is that they're getting an enormous amount of pressure to remove something, anything that's referencing Pizzagate on your site, or else we're going to label you as a spreader of misinformation too. And then we're going to pressure advertisers not to work with you, and we're just going to ruin you financially.
And there it is.
So,
and folks, I really want you to Andrew, I'm glad you said that. Folks, understand exactly that, and we will ruin you. We will take you. We will knock the funding out. I mean, you think you're smart, guys, right? Okay, getting advertisers. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to knock those advertisers right out from underneath you. You want to go here? We're going to make it impossible for you to support your independent news media. And this is why, Andrew, we need to support your organization. Go to thecitizensaudit.com. Support Andrew Kerr. And Andrew, you're doing such great work on Media Matters. You need to be careful, but folks, support Andrew Kerr. Support his work at thecitizensaudit.com. Andrew, thanks, man. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this. Really, it helps us out a lot.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I apologize for the audio issues on the first half of our interview.
Hey, no worries, brother. But we're going to keep in touch. We're going to keep following you, and we're going to keep talking about you. And thanks for being on our side. God bless you, brother.
Thank you.
All right. Going to be right back, folks. Stay right where you're at. Dave from X22 Report coming right up.